Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Monday, brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, whatever it may be. They'll make sure you're fully insured and also get you the best price possible. Saving money means more than ever, and customer service means more than ever to the outstanding people at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. As you often hear me say, they happen to be great people who are just terrific at their jobs. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. So it's the Chiefs and the Niners in the Super Bowl. It's one of those that, without knowing how the season would play out, and every season plays out with its own personality, a lot of people probably would have had both of those teams on their preseason radar for the Super Bowl. Maybe you wouldn't have predicted it, but there would have been two of the teams you would have considered. Would that be fair, Todd?
I would say so. I saw somebody from the NFL Network retweeted themselves that a half an hour before the opener, that's what he predicted the Super Bowl to be.
Yeah, right.
I'd pat myself on the back, too.
Yeah. Too many people in this business do that. but then again, you were at the Shikolimi game the other night. All right, so just kidding. Your guy. How was the suit on Friday night? Was he
quite good? We had a good one to. He had a good one to do.
Yeah, good. Dave was brilliant, I'm sure.
Always. I mean, they were up. Schick was up by 15, I think, in the third quarter, and still up by 10 in the fourth. And Seals Grove came back and won.
Yeah. Oof. I did one of those on Saturday night, which I'll get to in a minute, because there's a football analogy I think that fits. Where Penn State is defensively right now in basketball. And it's a football analogy. I think that if you think about it, works. In fact, I'll just spell it out quickly now. Penn State's Paul Keels, who broadcasts Ohio State, was asking me about Penn State's defense before the Ohio State game. And he said, what about the team defensively? And I said, Paul, the first 64 feet, they are outstanding and can be scary. I said, the problem has been the last 30 feet, that once you get past the 64-foot area, and now it's half-court, like one-on-one defense, I said, then it becomes a problem for them in terms of the man-to-man matchup half-court. So the analogy is this, and Dick and I have talked about this, Dick Girardi and I. They're a lot like the football team that has the great pass rush. And if they are getting sacks, their defense is playing great. But if they're having a day where they're not getting to the quarterback, and now you have to rely on the play of the back seven, then it becomes problematic. So the Eagles, for example, are a great example. The Eagles a year ago made the Super Bowl, and remember, they had sack numbers of historic proportions. 70 sacks last year for that Eagles defense, right? 70 of them. Their pass rush was led by Hassan Reddick in particular, was not just good, it was great a year ago. But what didn't the Eagles do in the Super Bowl? right? What didn't the Eagles do in the Super Bowl? They didn't sack Mahomes. And what did the Chiefs do to the Eagles? They shredded them for 38 points. Now, 31 were from the offense. The other one was from the fumble. And this year, the Eagles' defense really struggled. How many sacks do the Eagles have this year? 43. When you're sitting there and you rely so much on your pass rush and have 27 fewer sacks, which is nearly two per game, and your secondary is getting shredded, that's because that initial line of defense, that pass rush, and it's not their fault because, look, your back seven has to play. You know, you can't just say every game, hey, we're going to get five sacks. Like, no, you're really not. For Penn State now, that pass rush are steals, deflections, disruptions. When they're getting steals, deflections, disruptions, forcing, creating turnovers with that pressure on defense, it looks great. And then, if it's not getting there, because in the second half, I think the first 12 minutes of the second half, Penn State forced one turnover. And Minnesota was comfortable getting into the half-court offense. And they were hitting shots. And they were beating the one-on-one. And they were getting to the bucket. And it made such a big difference because, again, they had the ability to conquer the first 64 feet. And Penn State's defense right now, the way it's going for them, is that it's like the team with the great pass rush. When they're getting sacks, that defense looks great. When they are on basketball, when they're getting deflection steals, forcing turnovers, they look great. But if they're not getting steals, deflections, turnovers, and it becomes a half-court offensive game, that's where they've struggled defensively. Too much downhill stuff, openings to the bucket, not enough defensive rebounds. Just like the football team that relies heavily on the sack, if they're not getting sacks, the opportunity is there to get shredded. Detroit was like that in the second half. Detroit is a team that relies a lot on its pass rush because their secondary is, by major league standards, no better than okay. And yesterday in the second half, the 49ers finally took advantage of that. And that's how I view how Penn State's problem on defense has been. First 64 feet, and when they're getting steals, deflections, things like that, all right. Good-looking defense. It's like, wow, 70 sacks. That's a good-looking defense. Not getting sacks. Defense struggling. Not getting deflections, takeaways, turnovers. Not getting stops. So that's the analogy I'm using. This is the part where you tell me I'm all wet.
Well, I was going to say that 34 feet also kind of extends to them on their offensive side, too, because if they're not getting those deflections and stuff, they're not good enough in the half court offensively to not have that easy offense at times, too.
Well, yeah, when a team is making a run at you, how you can stem the run is by hitting a shot. And normally the one that's the killer is the three-point shot because team is climbing uphill against you. They're climbing. Now we're further behind. And we got to reclimb. Well, last year Penn State had those guys, a multitude of guys like that. Andrew Funk, Seth Lundy, Miles Dredd, where suddenly you could stem a run because you would then hit a shot to then have them go, oh, we've been climbing. And it's so discouraging for a team when that happens. This team, on a consistent basis, doesn't have that kind of player. And, I think going into the season, they thought they would. You know, I think they thought a couple of these guys would play like that, but to this point have not. And that's been one of the issues. They get into a situation like Saturday where they could really use a guy to hit a shot like that. And it doesn't happen, and it keeps the door to the comeback open. So it's just a multitude of things. Then, of course, at the end, when they lose both Kanye Clary and Nick Kern, you're looking out there going, well, you lose one of your best one-on-one ball defenders, and you lose one of the truly excellent offensive weapons in the conference, who may not be having his best night, but like he can go off for 10 straight points at any minute. That's the way he is. And great crowd. Everybody's excited. And they did not win the game. Come back by Minnesota. And they win it on a weekend where the Lady Lion basketball team clobbered Maryland. Another great win for them. The wrestling team clobbered Maryland. That machine keeps rolling. The men's volleyball team beat number one Ohio State not once. Oh, no, beat them twice over the weekend. And then men's ice hockey team swept Ohio State. So you had a lot of great results over the weekend, but the game that Dick and I did, nope. That was the one where again, they didn't get it done. And that was a, you know, now it's double road week. You go to Rutgers. Rutgers averages, the key to Rutgers offense is simple. It's called the missed shot. You're like, what a missed shot. They average 13.1 offensive rebounds a game. I mean, they can't shoot to save their souls. But they get, and they know it. And they get a lot of them back. And that's, I mean, that's going to be one of the keys to the game is defending that element. The 13.1 offensive rebounds a game. And then they go to Indiana, which has also been struggling. But I've got a feeling that Khalil Ware might finally get back in the lineup. He's missed the last couple of games with a foot injury. But that's where they are. Now, as for the football games, and one other note, I know it's easy to sit there, like, you know, and it's about coaching, it's about scheme and things like that. And of course, you know, I always, like, 9 times out of 10 just roll my eyes at that stuff because I'm there on an everyday basis, so I know what's being imparted to the players. Which, by the way, I'll get to with the Ravens game in the upcoming segment here, because that was a coaching thing that's, you know, where, like, the player, if you'd listen, you'd, you know what I mean, you'd be a better player. But Mike has drilled this into them every day. I mean, to the point where every day, not every day, but a lot of days, it's been frustrated no matter what he's been saying to certain players, right? They fall into bad habits, and he's been trying to break the habits over and over again. It's not easy to do. It's coaching, it's scheme, it's not okay. I see it every day. I see how Mike's trying to solve it every day. The players at some point themselves have to solve it, right? And maybe some of them aren't capable of solving it. Again, we talk about putting together a team in 59 days. There's certain things you're hoping to get, and then there's a reality what you do get. That's why we go back to the summertime. The summer, and I'd go out to speak, and people would ask me, you know, what do you think about the basketball team? And I gave the same answer over and over again. I think people assume the answer I gave. Oh, they're going to be fine. And I never said that. Not one time did I ever say that. I kept saying over and over again, I'm not sure. Because I kept looking at it over and over again, and it's like, okay, I like that. I'm not quite sure about that. And I even said to Dick, some parts are really good and other parts I'm just not sure about. And so when I go out and told groups, I said, look, I said, I'm not quite sure yet. I don't have a real handle or feel for the team at this point. And I said, it's only going to have to, I said, for me, I said, I'm going to actually have to watch them a lot of, you know, when you don't have a handle on, because there aren't any returning players, like I could tell Kanye was going to be better. I could tell that Lily had a shot to be better. And I had a shot. I didn't know if he would. But then you could tell in the preseason, like, okay, there's certain things he's doing that's better. Okay? But those are players I saw on an everyday basis last year. So you had a gauge. In watching the players this year, I mean, Penn's, it's not like Penn, I hadn't seen a couple of guys play, but I'd seen them play from afar. And that's why I gave the answer I did when I was talking to groups or even doing the show. As I told you, I said, we'll see. I'm not quite sure. I said, some things will be good. The other parts I'm not quite sure about. And here we are 20 games in, and now you can see why I gave the answer I gave. I just wasn't quite sure because I couldn't tell with all the moving parts how it was going to work out and play. All right, we've got a lot of football to talk about. The running joke is that in Vegas, Dan Campbell, if he has 20, looks at the dealer and says, hit me. Like, no, 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 no. Dan. But that's not the big, you know, that's part of the reason why they didn't win. We'll get to a bunch of reasons. And then we'll talk about Zay Flowers. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, so let's start with the Ravens. We'll get more into this. And then Zay Flowers. You can tell when somebody has never played in a big game before. And with all due respect, Pat Kraft, to all due respect to you, Boston College hasn't played in a big football game in a long time. Okay? You've got to be able to value the game and value the ball with fundamentals. In back-to-back sequences, he did neither. He makes a terrific play to get the ball down to the 7-yard line, and then he has to taunt the guy? No offense, this is not a preseason game in Atlanta. This is the AFC Championship game. Okay? Flip the ball to the official, go back and play again. You're behind. There is no reason to taunt anybody. All right? That's one of those incredibly immature, never been there before moments that you don't do. And then he committed a cardinal sin. You are taught that unless it's the last play of the game, the last play of the half, or fourth down, you don't reach the ball out to the goal line. I've heard that emphasized by James Franklin over and over and over and over and over and over again. And that's why, like, several, like, Danny Woodhead was talking about with the Patriots. Belichick talked about that all the time. Who was talking to Zay Flowers? Again, end of half, end of game, or fourth down are the only time.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK, sponsored by Prudy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, and today's show brought to you by Prudy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, RV, bundles. They'll make sure you're fully insured. They'll do everything they can to save you money. Number one at Purdy Insurance, customer service. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we are in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Elmhurst Wharf. Online at sunburymotors.com. All right, so We talked about Zay Flowers.
Steve.
Yeah.
We have John Griffith on the line. Griffith.
Oh, nobody told me. Okay. Well, I guess we'll switch the show up then. Okay. John, how are you?
Steve, I'm well. I'm well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. Appreciate it. Okay, so here we are. We're headed to the end of January, and we're about to begin February, and there are times when especially younger players will hit a wall and so forth because they haven't practiced this much in their lives. How do you feel about where your team is mentally right now?
Steve, I feel like our team's in a good mental state. We're coming off two wins, and yep. You know, we have a group that's really just seeking opportunities to compete, and they're still trying to figure out who they are as a group. So with that type of learning curve, you know, we're in the trenches right now. We're figuring it out day to day, and this group comes to the gym with the right attitude. And, you know, I wouldn't say we have approached maybe this idea of hitting a wall just yet. We've had a lot of ups and downs already within the season. And
yeah,
I think the attitudes of this group individually and now, you know, obviously becoming more of a collective attitude is trending in the right direction.
I mean, you win by 8, then you win by 10. So games that go into the last 5 minutes, in those final 5 minutes, what are you seeing in terms of winning plays that win the game for you?
For us, really, it's a combination of not turning the ball over and then really just getting consecutive defensive stops. You know,
yes.
Sometimes in the last 5 minutes, the game can play itself out in a variety of ways, but there are sequences that are really important, whether it be a score, a stop, and a score, or the other way around, stop, score, stop. So we want to really be on the right side of these sequences while making sure that from an offensive standpoint, we are taking care of the ball and we're having a purpose, which is something that, you know, we're continuously trying to teach our group, you know, what is the purpose and how do we get the ball to positions on the floor offensively that we can be successful, and then defensively making sure that we're taking away either the three-point line or the best player on the other team.
John, how much time in a practice do you spend just on situational basketball?
We probably spend 15 minutes a day on situational basketball.
Yep.
And it's a legitimate... We really break it down in its most granular form because I want our group to understand why we are doing things in critical moments so that they have a good confidence in what we're doing, but also, most importantly, they understand what we're doing.
Right, exactly. Your background in video, which you were able to sit down and break games down, what did it take then for you to continue to use that extensive experience of breaking down video, but then have the ability to communicate what you see to the individuals that need to know it?
Well, my background, I think, is an advantage in today's world of athlete because everything is so visual. So we teach as a staff. I teach as a head coach through video, you know, in the non-traditional form, which means I will show a clip of somebody in the NBA doing something almost identical to what we are doing.
Right.
And I'll build out the film in a fashion that our players can see it real time, somebody else doing it correctly, and then the following clip within that film session, they can see us doing it either incorrectly or... you know, it's an opportunity for us as a staff, for me, to applaud them for doing it correctly. So
right.
I use film often because it's a great teaching tool, because it allows, you know, it just allows the players of today's world just to see as opposed to hear.
And what doesn't film do? It doesn't lie.
It doesn't lie. Doesn't lie.
It does not lie. How did it feel to... This will be like a like a kidding point between the two of us here, but how did it feel to win in Soika the other day? Because that'd been the crazy thing to this point.
It was a nice win. You know what, Steve? Like, we have had a little bit more success on the road than we've had at home.
Yeah.
And part of it is maybe the quality of opponent that we've played at home. The last 5 minutes have gone the other direction, some of these home games. So I got to tell you, our home crowds have been great. The energy in Soika, it brings back fond memories. I can feel it when I walk on the floor pregame. And, you know, we're inching towards an energy level that historically has been attached to Bucknell basketball in Soika. And we just have to do our part. Our team has to do our part. And I know that the campus and the community will rally behind us.
Yeah, and they're doing that, which is interesting. Yeah, what's interesting, though, is you're not a team that goes out. Now, I think when you've been by a couple here and there, you're winning the three-point line. But, man, you do not get a lot of opportunities at the free throw line, John. You really don't.
Yeah.
Now, I know at this point, Steve preaches to choir. Coach is like going, yep, Steve sees it. Yeah. Right. What does that do to the margin of error when you're not getting as many of the free opportunities that maybe the other guy gets? And this is not an officiating question.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, schematically, you want to get to the free throw line. So my upbringing, you know, there's some stats that as I came along in the coaching world these stats were ingrained in me in an early part of my basketball career, player, but now coach, is you want to be in a position at the end of the game where you're making more free throws than your opponent takes. That's a box that if you can check, you put yourself in a higher likelihood of winning the game. And so when we're not getting as many free throw attempts as we'd like, certainly it puts a little bit more pressure on us to make shots. I do think that we're scoring in the paint, and so something that we are constantly trying to figure out and to help our group get to the free throw line a little bit more is, like, how do we draw a little bit more body contact, and how do we put ourselves in position to get to the free throw line when we're in the paint? You know, sometimes what happens is you pump fake and you jump away from the contact if you're in position to potentially draw a foul. And that's experience. You know, the more experienced players, the players that have played over 100 games, they know how to get to the free throw line. You know, Penn State, Ace Baldwin, he knows how to get to the free throw line. He knows body bumps, movements, defensive rotations, et cetera. We're still in that learning stage of, I get a guy in the air, how do I then get to the free throw line? And so we're close. We're just not completing these plays to ultimately get to the free throw line.
You are a 75% free throw shooting team. That's really good. What does that then mean to your ability to close out games, because you can get the ball to the right guys that when a team has to foul, you know you've got a pretty good shot of getting points and expanding?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly gives you confidence as a coach that you can close out a game. Interestingly, we were higher about 2 weeks ago. We've actually in a little bit of a rough patch in our free throw shooting the last three games, four games or so. We missed a couple free throws in our game at Lafayette that we typically don't miss. Our starting point guard, who was 14 for 14 at the time, missed two in a row. And free throws are a combination of mechanics and then really just poise. There's a mentality and a routine to being a really good free throw shooter that can be disrupted if you miss in timely moments. And I fancy myself as a good free throw shooter, and I've been in it. Yeah. It's like being a good golfer. You're on the tee box, and you just can't get the drive straight. And so you just kind of have to work it out. We've missed a couple that we don't typically miss. I do have great faith in our guys. We do work on free throws pretty regularly, but we don't maybe do it in the fashion that others do it. We're not taking hundreds of free throws a day. Ours are very situational. We want to concentrate when we're taking these free throws and build a confidence when we're on that foul line.
You didn't have to analyze my golf swing, John. Jeez, I mean, no, I'm just kidding. John, you got Loyola coming up. We know what their record is. Your players are aware of the record. But you're playing really well right now. What does it take psychologically to convince your team, I don't care who you're playing, it's quota but us?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a lot. If you were in our locker room right now, Steve, you'd know pretty quickly my respect level and, in turn, our team's respect level for Loyola. We don't look at records. It is not about, really, at the end of the day, Steve, at this point in the year, it's not about our opponent. It's just about us.
Yep.
It's about us taking the right approach. It's about us bringing, I use this phrase quite a bit internally, a hard hat mentality. Like, this is a work day. Yep. So we have a great respect for Loyola. I think Loyola is supremely talented, and they've had a couple rough stretches within the course of games that, you know, they've lost. But they're right there. They just beat Navy at Navy.
Yes,
and they're a talented group. So we don't. This group is humble. They're learning how to win. We don't take anybody lightly whatsoever, myself included. And again, to your point, it's really about us. It's about building our personality to a point that no matter what happens throughout the course of a 40-minute game, which adversity will hit, are we built strong enough to come out of that 40 minutes with the W?
Yeah. It's not like I've never been around Tavares Hardy or Gershon Cobb in my lifetime career. Those guys are good, hardworking guys who are now in the coaching ranks. So, no question. What would it mean, one final question, you talked about Soica becoming an exciting place. What would it mean to your guys to get a big crowd in there Wednesday night?
It's huge. It's a huge competitive advantage for us. I mean, at any point in the college basketball season, in any arena and gym in the country, if you're at home and you have energy in the building, it gives you a competitive advantage. Now, as it relates to Soica, because of how nice our arena is, the orange and the blue, and history at Bucknell, it just carries more weight. So we have to do our part. I understand that. When I was a player, the year we beat Kansas, you know, we had to build it. You build it, and people respect, you know, how hard you compete. I'm from Philly, Steve. I know it, man.
Yeah, you got that right.
I know it. You got to play hard. You need people to see the effort level, and that's a big part of this. So I think our group is playing hard right now, and we just got to keep doing what we want to do.
Hey, man, if you're out there on the asphalt in Philadelphia in the summertime, right, playing ball, there's only one way to play, John. There's one way to play.
That's right. There's a winner's court and a loser's court where I come from.
Yeah.
You don't
want
to wait. You don't want to be on the loser's court. You might not ever get back to that winner's court.
You got that right. And the other part too is there's certain arenas I go to where I refer to it as a claustrophobic environment. Soica is a claustrophobic environment, and that's what I love about the place. It's a claustrophobic environment. Yep. Hey, John, always a pleasure. Good luck this week.
Thanks,
really appreciate you as always, my friend.
Yeah, you too. I appreciate you. Talk to you soon.
All right, John Griffin, talking some hoops today. And we still have to talk about the... We haven't even talked about fourth down yet. Always an intriguing topic. We will get to that. It's amazing how some people give a pass on it, some don't. You know, here's an argument. Dan Campbell did nothing wrong. Actually, Dan Campbell did. All right, so it's all right. You know, I'm not saying they're all wrong. They're not all wrong. Okay? And we've got Ben Baldwin's fourth down calculator, which accounts for all manners of factors, blah, 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 blah. Guess what? You want to know how many games Ben has won in his career as a coach? Just give me a roundabout number. What do you think?
Oh, zero.
That's exactly right. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay, so we'll go back to the Ravens here for a moment.
Brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Marcus Reed and Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. You can't, one of the problems is, and you get into a big game, we talked about Zay Flowers, you can't commit like a taunting penalty. You're not playing the Falcons in the preseason here, or it doesn't matter. You're trying to get to the Super Bowl. Oh, and by the way, you're not winning. So you keep your emotions in check and play. And then the reaching out for the goal line again. Last play of half, last play of game, fourth down are the only times you fundamentally reach the ball out. If you keep the ball, boom, tucked in, what's the worst you're going to end up? The half-yard line? So those two there. But they also turned it over two other times. They had three turnovers in the game. You know, a big game like that, you can't turn the ball over. You can't. And what did Kansas City not do in the game? Kansas City did not drop the ball again for the second straight game. Travis Kelce had 11 targets in the game. He made 11 catches.
I was going to say, I think it's pretty clear that he probably wasn't 100% the whole back half of that season. He seems to be a completely different guy the last 3 weeks.
Right, but he's catching the ball. I mean, unless he had a hand injury.
Well.
You know what I mean? I mean, he's catching the ball. He's concentrating on whatever he's doing, his job now, more naturally and more fluid like he has in recent years that made him the platinum standard at his position. And he had 11 targets, 11 catches. Even at the end, when they needed to make a play, Mahomes threw the ball to Valdez-Scantling. And guess what? A guy that has been on an absolute roller coaster caught everything thrown to him yesterday, including that 33-yard play, just like he did against Buffalo. It's amazing how much more efficient your offense runs when guys are doing what they're supposed to do. Now, are there tough catches to be made? No question. And a quarterback needs receivers once in a while to make some tough catches for them, which Jared Goff did not have yesterday. Campbell had the two big drops. Laporta on that play over the middle got belted, ended up dropping the ball. Right, these are all plays that Detroit needed to stem the tide and didn't get from their receivers. That's part of how they lost, and we'll get to more on what they did in a moment. But Kansas City was making catches. They made plays. Right, stayed away from the big mistake, didn't turn the ball over that opened the door for Baltimore to get an easy drive. On a day where Lamar Jackson wasn't playing well, I mean, Lamar Jackson played okay, but not great. And not only that, but they lured him into throwing the ball deep. That's what happens when you get out there and occasionally mix in cover three. What does cover three make you think? Cover three makes you think, I can go deep. What does cover three designed to do? In reality, it's to keep you from throwing deep. Okay. And then there's the end. This tells you where Baltimore's mental state was all day long. You got an opportunity to maybe get a stop, use your timeouts, give yourself a shot. So they come off, I think it was the 2-minute warning, and they have 12 guys in the field. What? How do you come out of a timeout and have 12 guys on the field? First of all, they're milling out there to begin with. You don't have anybody in the box, and they have a multitude of coaches up in the box that's going, do. Hey, man, we got 12 out there. Nope, played the play with 12. It's the player's fault for being out there. It's the coach's fault for not realizing he was out there. Somebody put him out there. And then somebody else didn't realize that they had too many guys. That's off a timeout. Okay? That shows that you're panicking. And then Roquan Smith, I don't know what he's doing. This is the leader on your defense, and he commits that penalty? Like, what are we doing here? This is the part of the game where you're trying to get the ball back, and you commit those two? You're not ready to play ball in the big leagues when that happens. I mean, those are like 12 guys in the field. That's okay. We always talk in tennis unforced errors. That's an unforced error. Belting the guy before the ball is snapped is an unforced error. Okay? And Kansas City is a team defensively. Credit where credit's due. Steve Spagnuolo, and he's got the right guys to dial this stuff up with. He's got Karlaftis. He's got Jones. He's got McDuffie. He's got Snead. I think Snead's a terrific player. He can dial up a lot of stuff on defense that can cause problems. Kansas City has not given up more than 30 points of the game all season.
That looked like, for all the world, for the first quarter, that they were nobody was going to be able to stop the other, and I don't think anybody scored after midway through the second quarter.
No, did not. And Lamar Jackson is a terrific runner. He is a good thrower. He is not a great thrower. You have to make some great throws in the biggest of moments, and that has really never been his forte.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Suncast Incorporated.